My guest today is co-founder and partner of a real estate-based law firm. His name is Kelly Richardson. He's also the general counsel for five Association of Realtors in Southern California. They do a lot of homeowners association work, known in the business as HOAs. And he writes an HOA column that appears in the Santa Barbara News Press. He's based in Pasadena. But to quote him, he says, "Sometimes I never see my clients and never visit their property." So you don't need to be around the corner. He does consultations all over the state. And he's not with me now. He's on the phone. Welcome to Radio Real Estate, Kelly Richardson.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you having me.
Now, I meant to ask you right before we started, I wanted to give the name of the law firm, but I didn't ask you how to pronounce the second name. So what's the name of the law firm?
Well, we're Richardson, Ober, and DiNicolo.
DiNicolo. Yeah, we were talking before we came on, and it's not spelled DiNicolo, so thank you. Richardson, Ober, and DiNicolo.
Right.
And so I'm glad you came on. I know you had a new granddaughter, so you couldn't make it last week.
Yes, and thanks for putting up with my schedule. Little Janie is healthy and thriving, and looking forward to seeing her again in a couple weeks.
And I want to compliment you. When I called your voicemail, you left me a voicemail, and you repeated your phone number twice, slowly. And then at the end of your voicemail, you repeated it a third time. So my hat's off to you. Boy, I love people that call me, "Yeah, my God, 8054, thanks, Bob." So you can't follow. So let's talk about your specialty, starting off with one of your specialties, fair housing laws. We have them in California, and we have federal housing. Talk about them and what they have in common and how they differ.
Well, the fair housing laws in the United States are not new. They've been around for decades, but they are evolving quite a bit in recent years. California has its own body now of fair housing law that is, for the most part, parallel to federal law, but it is not identical. California, for example, has a number of additional protected classes that have heretofore not been identified as such by federal law, although there is legislation pending in Congress right now that would add a few more, protected classes to the list. So it's interesting. In California, we have to check the state law and the federal law because they're not quite the same. And then we also now in California have state regulations. We're the first state in the USA that has its own independent body of fair housing regulations that we also have to attend to. That happened last January 2020.
Wow. Well, California is usually leading the way in regulations, so that's not surprising. But generally, if one was to follow all of California's rules and regulations, they would probably not be violating anything under the federal law?
I think that's fair. For the most part, California is equivalent to the housing and urban development regulations on fair housing, and then we've gone a little bit beyond. I think the one area where we perhaps are a little bit behind, and only one area, is with so-called comfort animals or assistive animals. Whereas HUD is starting to recognize that not all animals are appropriate as a comfort animal.
Yeah, people do tend to exaggerate that and maybe ruin it for everybody else. My guest is a real estate-based attorney, Kelly Richardson, law firm Richardson, Ober, and DiNicolo. So additional protected classes in the feds, is that going to include attorneys and realtors?
Well, it already does. Source of income has already been a protected class at both the state and federal level. I used to joke that attorneys were the only group that you could discriminate against. And then I was reminded by Phyllis Cheng, who was for a long time the director of the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing. She said, "No, Kelly, Attorneys are that's a source of income issue. You can't discriminate against somebody based on what their profession is.
Well, first of all, it's good of you to credit her, and that was a very clever answer you gave me when I tried to make a very bad joke. So good for you.
she ruined my joke too, so it's okay.
So we got this as of newer news, January 2020, California is the first state to have its own body of regulations. And so do you have any war stories you want to relate to, or how people can relate to, you know, what this means in the trenches for people who are either tenants or living in an HOA or a landlord?
Well, I think for most citizens, the fair housing law crosses your path most commonly when we're dealing with accommodation of disabilities. Normally, when we think of fair housing, we immediately think of racial discrimination and terrible things like that, which are still a problem, I'm sorry to say. But statistically, the most common type of action that the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing pursues is actually discrimination based on disability, or the failure to help somebody who says, I have this disability, landlord or HOA, building owner, can you help me out in this way? And if the landlord is not reasonable, then that often results in disputes and potentially enforcement action and or lawsuits.
And something I learned from you, because Kelly Richardson, he was speaking to my office for bringing us up to date. I think even attending that event kind of satisfied something for the practice and the business. And you had, these different orders of complaints. And but specifically, I was going to mention that you said with landlords and disabilities that there's some fall into the category that the landlord would make provisions, but sometimes the tenant would. What are those?
Well, there we rely a little bit on some federal guidance. The state regulations don't really help us much in terms of who pays for an accommodation. Now, obviously, some accommodations involve no expense, like somebody says, can you move my parking space close to the elevator because I've had a knee replacement and I'm going to be hobbled for the next 6 months. Or I need a comfort puppy that helps me with my anxiety. That doesn't involve any expense to the landlord. But sometimes when somebody's asking for a ramp into their residence, or maybe to widen a doorway for a wheelchair, or put a hard floor in because the person has allergies and can't tolerate carpet. We don't have a whole lot of guidance in California heretofore as to who pays. So we go to the HUD guidance and the Department of Justice guidance, and there is some fairly old guideline that says that if the accommodation that somebody's asking for, if it just benefits that resident, it doesn't have to be an owner, just the tenant, a resident who lives in that space, then the tenant is expected to pay for that alteration. If it is an accommodation that helps the entire property, for example, in a large apartment building, somebody asks for some ramps into the community center or the rec room, well, that benefits everybody. And so the landlord is expected to pay for that type of accommodation.
And if the ramp was just entering this one apartment?
Then normally we would expect the individual resident to pay. From time to time, I remember a couple of years ago, I had a elderly resident's son who was a practicing attorney and litigator call my client and say, well, my mother has some significant disabilities and she wants a wheelchair lift to be installed outside her home. And so the client referred this question over to me for both reasons. It was fair housing and it was a lawyer making an implied threat. And so I responded to the attorney and said, well, that's great. Tell us what you propose to do. Send us some sketches about what you propose to install, and then we'll look at what you propose to do. And the lawyer responded back saying, well, isn't the building going to pay for it? I said, oh, no. No, we're going to look at allowing your mother to do it, but of course it has to be at her expense. And interesting thing. The guy never called me back. When his mother had to pay for it, I guess it wasn't that important.
Right. Did you give an example, another war story? And I guess maybe the attorney knew the answer and he was just hoping to maybe get it done for free. But I liked your example of the ramp and common area that would benefit everybody. Widening a doorway to the unit itself would seem to only benefit the tenant, so maybe the tenant would pay for it. Maybe widening a doorway to a common area, you could argue, would benefit everybody.
Right.
Your example of someone has allergies and there's carpet, they want to pull the carpet and put down some kind of, if not hardwood floor, engineered floor, laminate. One could argue, the tenant could argue and say, well, this is going to benefit every tenant in the future. But the landlord could argue and say, well, maybe the next tenant prefers carpeting. So would that end up sounding like a tenant improvement?
I think, generally speaking, we would still expect the resident to pay for it. But it does raise, Mark, a secondary question, which is, when the person with the allergy disability moves out, can we fairly expect that person to restore the residence back to carpeting? If there are tenants in the apartment or condominium immediately below that residence, then they're subject to noise nuisance problems in a wood-framed building. And so typically we expect the allergy-disabled person to re-carpet that residence at the time that they cease to occupy it. The big problem that we're getting into, and I'm seeing it all over the place in the last couple of years, we're seeing more and more people have medical diagnoses that their doctor says they can't live with carpeting and pad because it holds allergens that can make them physically ill. But then we have the homeowner underneath or the tenant underneath who says, wait a minute, this is a wood frame building. The whole reason we have carpet and pad is to keep some reasonable level of quiet. And so now we have dueling interests, the person above who has the allergy problem, but the person below who may be subjected to significant nuisance issues if that floor above is a hard floor. So then we get into horse trading, quite frankly, as to how much sound buffering can we reasonably require the upper resident to install to not completely quiet the floor, but at least make it reasonable for the person below. And then we wind up really handing the ball off to acoustic experts as to drawing that magical line of reasonableness, because it's not any accommodation the landlord is required to give, it's reasonable accommodations. And obviously, if an accommodation is irritating somebody adjacent, that is an indicator maybe it's not reasonable.
And of course, the person with the allergies was also a tap dancer, so that would have been even leading to more problems. My guest is attorney Kelly Richardson, a co-founder and partner of real estate-based law firm Richardson Ober. Don't tell me, DiNicola?
DiNicolo.
DiNicolo. DiNicolo. We'll get it. We'll get it right. I'll just think of Nick at Night. Nickelodeon. DiNicolo. A friend of mine is living in a condominium complex, and we were having this very discussion that the condo complex rules prohibit tile or hardwood floors because of the noise issue. So if that's a rule in the condo, I imagine that if someone rents one of those units and they make that request after they move in, which seems odd if someone has these allergies, why would they move into a place with carpeting? But if they make that request after they move in, then it's not reasonable if it's specifically prohibited by the CCNRs in the condo complex?
No, that's an interesting point, Mark, and I'm glad you raise it. One of the key things that I think is surprising to the average layperson is that when you get into the accommodation of a disability, you set aside the house rules, you set aside the HOA CCNRs or regulations, you look strictly at what is the person asking for and does it create any other problems that make it unreasonable. So yeah, when in this condominium complex in Ventura County, that's I have a rolling dispute now between two condo residents, upper and lower, in a wood frame building. The upper person has a medical letter saying she needs to have hard floors. but the person below is sending emails to the general manager on almost a daily basis saying, how long do I have to not sleep, you know? And so the HOA has a ban on hard floors, but we set that, we set the documents aside and we strictly look at the abstract notion of reasonableness. And that's not easy, because it what is reasonable isn't always easy to define.
So there's nothing that exists short of hardwood floors, something that's soft but doesn't also retain allergens.
Well, there are some very interesting products that have been around now for about 30 years, and they're continuing to come up with new ones. Products that can be put underneath a hard flooring surface, whether tile or planks or laminate materials, that are vibration buffering materials that are either spongy, there's cork that's been around for a long time. So there actually are measures that can be taken to substantially reduce the noise from a hard floor. But the truth be told, in a classic wood frame, 3 or 4 story residential building, whether it be condo or apartment, one thing that most home buyers don't understand is that when your floor is part of the neighbor's ceiling right below you, there is going to be noise. Even in a carpeted floor, you're going to hear some noise. And in a buffered floor, you're going to hear some heels hitting and impact. It just can't be completely prevented. What happens, though, is once you get irritated about the noise, then there's just the psychological phenomena where you become hypersensitized to it. And it really gets difficult to parse out as a lawyer, when is it somebody who's just upset, and when do they have a legitimate grievance in terms of the level of noise they're complaining about? Really not an easy calculation to make.
Well, I hate to just not let go of this very simple topic, but someone moves in to a carpeted apartment, how much time goes by before they suddenly say, oh, look, I have this letter from my doctor, I need to get rid of this carpeting? And it's kind of like, well, how far can you go if you're representing the association? It's like, well, when did you first get this allergy? Have you had this allergy forever? Did you move in with this allergy? Does that then make it unreasonable? You should not have moved in?
No, we're not allowed to argue that. And one of the things that's a little discouraging about the current state of fair housing law at the state and federal level is you and I would think as non-medical people that, well, obviously, if you're going to claim an allergy disability, you have to have a medical doctor who's expert in your allergies to provide the letter for you. It doesn't have to be that. It could be your orthopedist. It could be your podiatrist. It could be a nurse. It could be a social worker or a caregiver. The list of who can document a disability is extraordinarily broad right now, and it does open up to potential abuse.
Yeah, I mean, we want to not take someone's disability and try to minimize it, belittle it, call it fake. But when you just said, you know, if you're just opening it up to, you know, when someone who cuts your hair then writes a note saying you have a disability, I mean, you know, and you can't argue that. So someone moves in and a week later they could say, oh, by the way, I have an allergy?
Yes, yes. And I've had it happen a number of times in the last 20 years where somebody will put a hard floor in contrary to the landlord or the condominium association's rules. And then when confronted, immediately what happens? We get a letter from some type of a healthcare person saying this person needs this hard floor because of allergies. Never mentioned until they were confronted. And obviously that raises an inference that this is a little convenient. And that's where the abuse of the fair housing disability laws really becomes frustrating for me, because it also tends to create backlash against the hundreds of thousands of people who have legitimate disabilities who really do need our help. And because of the well-publicized abuse situations, I always worry that causes a tendency to backlash against the good people who really do need our help and who are not gaming the system.
Absolutely, absolutely. My guest is attorney Kelly G. Richardson, partner of Richardson, Ober and I won't remember how to say this guy's name.
DiNicolo.
DiNicolo, based in, you're down in Pasadena, but works all up and down the state. We need to take a commercial break. We'll have one more segment with our guest, and maybe I was remembering a story. Maybe we should move on because I'm stuck on this this disability. But you had another war story where someone wanted it was a parking space or something, wanted closer to the door. There was some, remember that story? Maybe you could tell that when we come back. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com.